Welcome to the Daily VFN Radio Program, where we're keeping the conversation light. That's L-I-G-H-T light, with your host, Greg Lancaster.
Hello, I'm John Ramos, and joining me today is Pat and Chris. My goodness, here we are again.
Once again,
here to encourage you on VFN Radio. We want to give a shout out to all of our friends all across the country. And we want to say hello and welcome to be a part of this wonderful conversation that we've just been having. And it's happening.
Yeah.
It's happening all around the world now. And it's so wonderful to hear from y'all and connect with y'all and see all the things that you're posting and sharing. It's good. But we want to encourage you today. We're going to have a conversation with you as we have been. So many things are happening today all around the world. And you're going to have to pause for a little while and say, okay, I see that. I see that's going on there. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's going on there. That's going on here. And you got to say, you know, I know Jesus. You know, if you have a relationship with the Lord, you can say, you know, I know God, mm-hmm. and I know in the end, God wins. And on the end, you will win if you don't give up, if you don't fall out, and you stand in your walk with God.
Right.
And the way that you're going to be able to stand in times that are troubling and times that have all sorts of things coming against you is you cry out to God. There's everyone wants a secret formula. You know, how do you do it? How do you make it?
Mm-hmm.
Things are happening, and it's God. It's God. And you can make it too. You just have to call out for him and cry out for him, and he'll show up on your behalf, and he'll be with you, and he'll walk you through the troubling times. He'll walk you through times of that you thought you couldn't even carry yourself. And there's nothing like knowing the Lord in the fellowship of his suffering and to know that he's the one that'll lift you up.
That's right.
You know, I often say that I don't know what tomorrow holds, but at least I know the one who holds tomorrow.
That's right.
And with that, listen, I can sleep at night. You can sleep at night. You can have peace. You don't have to know what's going to happen every second of the day. You don't know what's going to have to happen next month or next year or 5 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
All you got to know is him who knows today, this second. He knew when you were born. I mean, he knew. He knows everything.
That's right.
And if he's holding everything together.
Which he is.
Then he'll hold you together. I know. Sometimes it feels like you may fall apart. But let me tell you, God can and will be there for you. We just want to bring you this hope this morning that it's God.
Right.
God alone who will carry you through the troubled waters. And he's a friend that sticks closer than a brother. And then no matter what, he's there and you can count on him. And that's so good because, you know, sometimes people won't be there. Sometimes, you know, those that you thought that would stand strong won't.
Mm-hmm.
But I love how the Lord, you know, the book of Revelation says the rider of the horse, his name is faithful and true.
Mm.
And thank God that God is faithful and true.
That's right.
Well, you know, a lot of things are happening in the Middle East. You want to, please, don't stop praying for the Middle East. But I want you to hear about a fantastic testimony. An awesome testimony by a man named Umar Mulindi, who was a Muslim. He was a Muslim who was taught to hate Jews, and God radically saved his life. Let me tell you something. Somebody with an argument is always at the mercy of someone who had an experience.
Mm-hmm.
And don't count anybody out. Don't count anyone out from hearing the gospel, because let me tell you, God can share, God can reveal, God can open blind eyes and cause people to see that he is God,
mm-hmm.
that he loves them, that he died for them, that he has a plan for their life, and he can rescue them. And what we can do is we can partner with God. It's time to elevate and raise our vision and to raise our ability to believe God for things that are impossible with man,
mm-hmm.
but with God, all things are possible. And I think that sometimes we forget that. We're attacked in that, well, I got to do this and I got to do that, or they won't listen, or,
mm-hmm.
oh my goodness, that is so hard. Listen, if you're trying to do everything in your own strength, it's just not going to happen. You're right. It is impossible. It's not going to work out. It's, yep, mm-hmm, check.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is that if you lean on God, if you cry out to him, if you trust him, he will show up every time. God rewards faith.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want you to hear this testimony, because here this man who at one point of his life did not know Jesus, at one point of his life hated Christians and the Jews, but something happened in his life. He had an encounter that changed his life, and not only changed his life, you're going to hear more about what happened to him after he gave his life to the Lord, after he preached the Lord's good news, and he's still going strong in the Lord. Listen, once you encounter God, there is no turning back. Listen to this report from CBN.
Umar Malindi was a Muslim who hated Israel until Jesus appeared to him in a dream. After that, he became a Christian and started a church in Uganda.
But his remarkable story doesn't end there. Scott Ross met Malindi in Israel, where he was receiving treatment for severe burns after Muslim extremists threw acid on him.
On Christmas Eve 2011, Pastor Umar Malindi was attacked by two Muslims with buckets of acid. The acid ate away his skin, his eye, and his ear. He now wears a special pressure mask to aid the healing process.
My conversion from Islam and my love and promotion of the love of Israel in my community touched the people on the other side to haunt me and to hunt me for a kill.
Malindi was raised as a Muslim and hated Israel. He knew if he deserted Islam, he could be killed. But he had a dream that changed his life.
It was a vision you had or a dream?
It's a dream, sleeping. I was in the midst of fire crying, but I saw that many of the people who were with me in this fire were the fellow Muslims we go with in the mosque. But as I was crying at the climax of the scene, somebody shining stood on the right side and told me that Islam is leading you to this torture. Repent, be born again, you shall survive.
Instead of believing in Jesus, Malindi prayed Muslim prayers against bad dreams, but it didn't work.
And after that, I went back to my place, and the dream came again. The following day, I took myself to the church, and I gave my life to Jesus.
Malindi became a successful evangelist, winning other Muslims to the Lord. He later founded Gospel Life Church in Kampala, Uganda, where 30% of more than their 1,000 members are ex-Muslims. He also came to love Israel and brought others to visit the Holy Land.
Your former friends and your brothers in Islam must have hated you.
They hated me. That's the reason. So on the 24th of December 2011, as I was coming out of my church, somebody pretended as a believer. He said, "Pastor, can you help me?" He wanted my attention, my full face. Yet he had a bucket of acid in his right hand. As I was turning like this, the Spirit of God in me told me, he's a wrong person. So I turned my face to enter my car quickly to drive away. As I was going, approaching my car, he poured a bucket of acid on my head.
Oh.
So I felt like I'm being thrown into hell. I felt fire from up to down to my toes, and I was like, something is cooking me. And they shouted, "Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar," 3 times. I realized that I have fallen into the ambush of Muslim terrorists.
Malindi was rushed from one hospital to another, first in Uganda, then in India, and finally Israel.
It was a deep, very deep and very severe burn to the face, ear, and eye.
I spoke with Dr. Joseph Hike, head of the burn center at Sheba Medical Center, Tel Shomer Hospital.
Because it was 2 weeks old, we had to wait and see that our cleansing was good enough or sufficient. And then in the second stage, we ordered skin substitutes. We reconstructed the face, obviously in association with his own skin grafts.
This is a man from Uganda,
mm-hmm.
and here we are in Israel. So why would you take him in here?
There's no difference, and we do not discriminate between age, race, origin, religion, or whatever. This hospital has a big tradition for many years now to help around the world.
What is the prognosis now from here on out?
Most of the grafting helped and succeeded in 100%, but unfortunately we'll need further surgeries.
Melindy told me that people need to understand that it takes the power of God to spread the gospel and comes with persecution.
So you're not angry with God?
I'm not angry with God. It has encouraged me to serve the Lord more, to expose the lies. You see, people say Islam is a peaceful religion. But if you say that Islam is peaceful, look at me.
Yes.
I am the true picture of what Islam is all about.
But they say there are radical elements and there are good elements, peaceful elements in Islam as well.
But that's not practical because these radical people, they read what they read from the Quran. And whenever a Muslim does not like something, everywhere in the world people know, they will demonstrate on the street. If not killing ambassadors, they will burn the houses and everything.
Melinda says Islam wants to rule the world, and terrorists take their inspiration from verses in the Quran.
This verse says, فَقَتِلْهُمْ حَتَّى لَا تَكُونَ فِتْنَةً وَيَكُونَ دِينَ اللَّهِ.
Which means?
Kill, fight, and kill those non-Muslims until when there is no any other except the religion of Allah.
How do we, as Christians, in my case, an American Christian from Scotland, how do we fight that? How do we defend ourselves against that?
Islam is eating the West because the Western world has compromised and sweet talking about what is happening and thinking that keeping quiet will save the situation. But you have to remember, hiding your head in the sand cannot chase your enemy who is chasing you to kill you.
How do I love my enemy? If in this case you said you love your enemy, but they did this to you.
The best way to love your enemy, in this case, to love the Muslims, is to preach the gospel of Christ to them.
Mm.
If we take the gospel to them, at whatever cost, we are loving them.
Wow, that's so powerful. Here, Melindy, who was a Muslim, was absolutely converted to Christianity because Jesus Christ, I mean, he had a vision, he had a dream. God spoke to him in a dream. One dream changed his entire life, and he knew, like, there's some things that you just know. Listen, like, you know the sky is blue and the grass is green. You know when you know when you know that God spoke to you, that you had an encounter with God, that God loves you. And that's what happened to Melindy.
Mm-hmm.
And so here he is preaching the gospel, you know, all over the place, converting large amounts of Muslims. And here somebody comes to attack him and throws acid. I mean, think about
how
horrific. We're going to make this available for you on the torch, but you could actually see that he's wearing some sort of like a ski mask on his face. It's not a ski mask, but it's like that. It's designed to, mm-hmm. I guess, hold
like
his skin
compression
together.
Compression mask.
Yeah. And all you see here is his eyes really coming on out. And to see him talk, and I mean, they showed a picture of he lost his eye and everything, almost mm-hmm. right side of his face.
Right.
And God spoke to him. He said, they're here to do you wrong. And as soon as mm-hmm. he turned his face, they caught the side of his face. Had he yeah. not heard the voice of the Lord.
And listened and obeyed.
Exactly. His whole face could have lost both of his eyes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And listen, let me tell you something. There is a radical Islam. I mean, he is telling you himself, this is a man who followed the Quran. It says to kill and fight non-Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
And he says anyone who would say that this is not radical, this is not, you know, bent on evil, look at me. Look what happened to my face. Look at me. He's a perfect example. And listen, if you haven't heard JJ yet, we strongly encourage you to listen to JJ, because it's going to give you a perspective on what's happening and what their agenda is towards the Jews and towards the Christians. And I love how, you know, he doesn't regret it. He says, listen, this is how you love Muslims. Because God loves Muslims. Mm-hmm. You preach to them the good news. You preach to them the gospel of Jesus Christ that's going to open their eyes, just like Melindy's eyes were open. God wants to work with us to perform signs and wonders so that many can come to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. But somebody has to go. Somebody has to hear. Someone has to listen. Someone has to obey. Someone has to preach the good news to them so that they will know. Not all of them are going to be won because of a dream. Not all of them are going to be won because of an encounter. God can do whatever he wants to do, but he chooses to partner with you, to partner with me, as we together, one, are sharing the good news and the love of Jesus Christ. Let me tell you something. It's the only thing that's going to save the entire world. You know, people want to talk about all the different problems that we have. We have mm-hmm. an economic problem. We have a gun problem. We have, you know, all these different situations that people are rallying these causes around, mm-hmm. you know. But the only problem that we have is a sin problem, and that people are away from God. That's the problem of the hour right now. Because when it's all said and done and it's all over, the only thing that matters is, did you know Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior? And where are you going to spend eternity?
That's right.
We're just passing through here. Life is but a vapor. We're basically here today, gone tomorrow on this earth, but we will live in eternity. And the question is, where will the world spend eternity? Mm-hmm. The choice is really clear, heaven or hell. And hell has nothing that I want.
Nothing.
You know, and heaven has everything that I want. Mm-hmm. But the passage to heaven is not about getting a good luck charm or a get out of hell free card. Mm-hmm. Heaven's the bonus. I mean, we inherit Jesus. That's the great prize, mm-hmm. is to be with the Lord, with him forever, and to be in his service. And so we want to encourage you today. Listen, maybe the Lord's calling you to reach Muslims. Maybe the Lord's calling you to reach others in your neighborhood, in your workplace, maybe amongst your own family. Maybe he's calling you to a different state in America or even out of the country. Listen, you only have one life to live, and the only thing that you can take with you is souls.
That's right.
It's the only thing. You don't see a U-Haul behind a Hertz. You know, you can't take this stuff and things. Mm-mm. The only thing we can take are those that we have ministered to, laid our lives down, and share with them the good news of the kingdom. Mm-hmm. Because time is short. The Bible says the days are evil, and now is the time. Today is the day of salvation. Listen, let's reach out to more Melindes that are willing to lay their life down for Jesus, who are willing to pay the price. This man had acid thrown on his face. His face is disfigured, totally disfigured. He lost an eye, and yet he will not shrink back. Mm-mm. But he's going to persevere and move forward and share the good news of Jesus Christ. Lord, may we all have that perseverance and utter devotion to you.
You're listening to VFN Radio. Don't forget, you can locate us at VFNTV.com. We'll be right back.
What religious rights are allowed in the workplace? This is Law and Justice with Jay Sekulow.
I'm a physician in an OBGYN's office in Missouri, and we have various fertility options that are available to patients. And my question is, do we have the right to set up guidelines in order to treat patients who are married and exclude those who may not be in married relationships or who may be lesbian,
or whatnot.
Well, you got to be really, really careful because you've got a situation in that where you're denying services based on someone's sexual orientation. The law does not really allow for that. It depends. A private medical clinic, of course, can decide what the facilities and what it wants to offer to various people and what it doesn't. But you've got to be very careful because there's state laws that deal with those kind of issues of state law discrimination.
The American Center for Law and Justice is committed to defending your religious and constitutional freedoms. Visit us at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org.
You know, quite often, you know, we're looking and we're searching, we're trying to find out, you know, maybe this will actually make me feel better. Maybe this job will fix me. Maybe this relationship will fix me. Maybe money will fix me. Maybe education will fix me. Maybe medication will fix me. I don't know what it is, but something we're always trying to, we don't consciously say, hey, I need a fix. We don't consciously say I have a hole in my heart and I'm trying to fill it. But the truth is, if we really studied it, if we really thought it through, the truth is that we have a hole in our heart and we're trying to fill it and nothing's working. And I'm going to tell you something, that journey that you went on, that you went to relationship after relationship, you went to job after job, you went after money, you went after fame, whatever it is, and it leaves you not only dry, but it leaves you shameful. It leaves you like, I'm not worth anything now. But let me tell you something. That was nothing but a distraction. That our God, through his son Jesus Christ, can actually cleanse you from all that. Don't worry about it. It's only religious people who will tell you that God won't accept you. That's like the Pharisees. That's the whole reason why Jesus came for us. You know, you've got to meet God through his son Jesus Christ. There's nothing more powerful. As a matter of fact, we shared a few of our stories at meetmyfather.org. We've shared a couple of them just to find out so you can get the different perspectives of how, you know, the people that God saves. You know, Paul said this. He said, the reason why God saved me is because I was the chiefest of sinners, and by looking at me, you can see how big his grace is. There's enough grace for you. You've got to meet my Father. Go to meetmyfather.org. Meetmyfather.org. You've got to meet him.
You know, John, the content and the topics and subjects that we've been hearing on the VFN TV Daily Live radio program has been encouraging. Is it not?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my goodness. I just want to encourage you, the listeners that have been listening, you know, if you've missed anything, I want to encourage you to go on VFNTV.com and you'll see a torch on the right-hand side. Click on that link and you'll be able to see all of the highlights. You'll be able to scroll back. You know, you might not have even known about the Daily VFN Radio program until like a week ago. But we have been posting all of the highlights since beforehand, and you can catch all of the highlights since before you've even been listening. Go to VFNTV, V for Vine, VFNTV.com, and then click on the torch on the right-hand side.
You're listening to VFN Radio, where we're keeping the conversation light. That's L-I-G-H-T, light, with your host, Greg Lancaster.
Welcome back. I'm John Ramos, and joining me today in the studio is Pat Hamilton. Well, you know, we're just finished talking about Umar Mulandi, and my goodness, the price that he pays.
Wow, unbelievable.
Paid and continues to pay to be a believer of the Lord Jesus Christ. Let me tell you, we have no excuse in the West. If you live in the United States, let me tell you, you are blessed. And we have no excuse when we look at what other believers around the world are enduring. We talked about the persecution that has occurred in China. We talked about what's happening all over the world. It's so important that we have this perspective. I mean, we want to avoid tomorrow's regrets today. We don't want to look at the Lord. We don't want to be standing in the line, the proverbial line in heaven, and look at these great men and women and children of God who endured much under great opposition, loved much under great pain, and we look at them and say, oh wow, you know, I often think about, you know, what would that encounter be like? You know, when we get so caught up maybe in the things of America and the get lost maybe in the blessing, what's that going to be like when we stand across, sit across a believer, mm-hmm. maybe from a third world country, a believer who endured much persecution, a believer who paid a physical price in their body for their love for God. When you think about the martyrs and you think about those during, you know, in Rome, when they were being fed to lions because they would not deny Jesus Christ, being torn apart by a lion, that's brutal. And yet they would not bow down. Listen, we can avoid that today. We can say, God, I'm going to give you my whole heart and whatever life that I have left in this body, I want to live it to glorify you. I want to lay it all down no matter what. I mean, today the American church says persecution is just not getting their way, not getting the, you know, they didn't play the right song. You know, they didn't pray for me today. Listen, that's not persecution.
Mm-mm.
That is not persecution. We can be encouraged by our brothers and sisters who have endured much. And let me tell you something. God will not disappoint you. He will always lead you into the blessing. He will always lead you in the right way. We know, and continue with God's news behind the news. There's been talk in the Middle East about Israel getting together, the United States sponsoring basically peace talks between Israel and Palestine,
mm-hmm.
the Palestinian Authority. And the Blaze is reporting that Israelis and their supporters have begun to voice fears that these peace talks, of course, sponsored by the Secretary John Kerry, United States,
mm-hmm.
Which is set to really start this week, they're fearful, they're concerned that these talks are going to have dangerous side effects of sparking new violence, just like has occurred in the past. You know, the problem sometimes is that we don't take time to look in the context of history.
Mm-hmm.
We just get some bit of information today, and we just make quick judgments as if nothing's ever happened before in the past. We mm-hmm. have no grid. We didn't take time to learn or educate ourselves or get the full facts of what's actually happening. But we take everything at face value and say, oh, well, this is just what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important to have perspective. It's really important to understand that this has been a conflict that's been going on for quite a while. And there's been numerous attempts for Israel to be able to share some land with the Palestinians.
I mean,
this has been going on for so many times, and they've mm-hmm. rejected it. They're
yeah.
rejecting it. And in fact, they respond with violence.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like, well, I don't get this. You say you want land and you want peace, and
right.
But yet when we try, Israel tries to extend the olive branch. They
yeah.
try to extend the hand of friendship to say, hey, we can coexist. Yet and still, it's rejected, and they're attacked.
Yeah.
And they're attacked. Listen, I mean, you start to wonder and pull back. Do y'all really want to get along? You know what I'm saying? do y'all really want to coexist?
Right.
Because, you know, we can do, this is not hard. And you see all these failed attempts at talks. I mean, you just keep kind of going around and around and around and around and around the circle. And listen, negotiations are not hard when you find out what the other side wants. Everyone wants something on each side. And then at a certain point, you got to realize, well, I can't have this or I can't have all of that. And you're willing to make some compromises. You're willing to lose some. And you look at Israel has made so many concessions. I mean, so many compromises.
Mm.
They've bent over backwards. They're patient. I'm just amazed, really,
yeah.
at the great patience that they have,
mm-hmm.
and when they're living in the cross, you know, the crosshairs of their enemies every single day.
Exactly.
I want you to see this. Well, we'll make this available for you on the torch, but we really want you to listen to this explanation about the Palestinian Authority, their land, Israel, and to give us more context of how all of this has been developing and history here. Let's get some fresh perspective, because they're talking about these talks again. They're trying to get these two sides together, and all this is about the land. Now, the UN has recognized the Palestinian Authority, but they don't have a piece of property. And they want this land. They want this land. Israel has tried so many times,
mm-hmm.
and yet again, it's always been, you know, they've been attacked, they've been dismissed, if you will. This is another time, and so based upon history, mm-hmm. I think they have right to be concerned. This is not good. I want you to listen to this, and we'll talk about it some more.
On May 16, 2011, the New York Times published an op-ed titled The Long Overdue Palestinian State by Mahmoud Abbas, president of the Palestinian National Authority. In that piece, Abbas called for the United Nations to formally recognize a Palestinian state based on the pre-1967 borders, regardless of negotiations with the State of Israel. The article appeared just a few days before Barack Obama's much-anticipated speech on the Arab Spring, in which the president also tried to jumpstart peace negotiations between Israel and the Palestinian Authority. To reach an agreement on a two-state solution, Obama declared, Israel must agree to return to the pre-1967 borders, modified only by mutually agreed land swaps. Now, neither Mr. Abbas nor Mr. Obama can explain how anyone could have recognized a United Nations-designated Palestinian state that Palestinian leaders and the Arab states themselves have rejected. Of the troubles in Ireland, the poet William Butler Yeats once wrote, "Great hatred, little room, maimed us at the start." In Palestine at the start, there was plenty of room, more than enough room, for a prosperous Jewish state and a prosperous Arab state. After World War I ended, with the dismantling of the Ottoman Empire, the League of Nations established the Mandate for Palestine, including all of the land that is now Israel, the West Bank, and the Gaza Strip, plus the entire territory east of the Jordan River, now called the Kingdom of Jordan. The area under the mandate was as large as Syria and about half as large as Iraq, yet the total population at the time was less than 1 million, of whom 10% were Jews. It was in that vast, underdeveloped, and underpopulated territory that the British had promised in the language of the 1917 Balfour Declaration to support the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people. The declaration also promised that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine. Open Jewish immigration to the Holy Land was encouraged, as was freedom of speech, religion, and assembly for the Arabs of Palestine, rights they had sorely lacked under Turkish rule. Mired for more than two centuries in backwardness and grinding poverty, Palestinians were never recognized by the Ottoman Empire as possessing any distinctive national identity. The Palestinians quickly took advantage of their new freedom to speak bluntly, demanding a stop to the Jewish immigration which had just begun. Said one Arab representative during the Paris Peace Conference, "We will push the Zionists into the sea, or they will send us back into the desert." Arif Pasha Dajani, a Palestinian leader from Jerusalem, warned that it is impossible to live with the Jews. In all the countries where they are at present, they are not wanted because they always arrive to suck the blood of everybody. If the League of Nations will not listen to the appeal of the Arabs, this country will become a river of blood. Well, as promised, blood did flow when the Palestinian demand to end Jewish immigration was not granted. Jerusalem was the first flashpoint for regular Arab attacks on Jewish communities in April 1920. Palestinians from nearby towns poured into the old city. The Muslim mayor of Jerusalem and other notables worked up the crowd to launch a jihad against the Jews. "If we don't use force against the Zionists and against the Jews, we will never be rid of them," urged newspaper editor Arif al-Arif. The crowd shouted back, "We will drink the blood of the Jews." Shouting Islamic slogans like "Muhammad's religion was born with the sword," thousands surged through the Jewish quarter and into West Jerusalem. The mobs vented their rage against any Jew they could find, burning and looting homes and stores, and even attacking British and Arab policemen. After several days of rioting, the final toll was 6 Jews dead, hundreds beaten, and widespread destruction of property. What became known as the Nebi Musa riot was the opening shot in a 90-year war to reverse the Balfour Declaration. And things soon got worse as the Allies, to assuage the fears of Arab monarchs, separated the land east of the Jordan River out of the total area accessible to Jewish immigrants and created the Emirate of Transjordan. Reconciling the aspirations of Arabs and Jews became far more tenuous after the Balfour Declaration had to be carried out in the truncated area of Palestine from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea. There was now much less room and a great deal more hatred. The decades that followed were marred by perpetual violence against the Jews, both in Palestine and in Europe. The two were often linked. Under the leadership of the Grand Mufti and president of the Supreme Muslim Council, Haj Amin al-Husseini, the Arabs of Palestine waged an endless jihad against their Jewish neighbors. When the British sent a royal commission to investigate a solution, the Jews, represented by Chaim Weizmann, pressed for a partition of the territory into two states, even if the territory assigned to the Jews was the size of a tablecloth. The Peel Commission's final report, published in July 1937, proposed such a division. The Jews were offered an independent state in a small enclave along the seacoast from Tel Aviv to the north of the country, constituting about 20% of the remaining mandate territory, while the Palestinian Arabs would get 80% for their own state. Desperate for any means to be able to bring in large numbers of the endangered European Jews, the Zionists reluctantly accepted the commission's partition plan. Led by the Mufti, the Arabs rejected partition out of hand and pressed on with the armed revolt against the mandate. The British succeeded in putting down the violence for a time. Al-Husseini was sent into exile, ultimately, in Hitler's Nazi Germany, where he lived as a special guest of the Führer. But severe limitations were placed on Jewish immigration to the Holy Land in the years leading up to the Holocaust that undoubtedly directly led to the death of many thousands of European Jews. Now, following the atrocities of the Second World War, Britain relinquished authority over the mandate to the newly formed United Nations. The UN created yet another commission to try to figure out what to do with the contested territory. The United Nations Special Committee on Palestine recommended, by a vote of 7-3, yet another two-state solution, another partition plan to the General Assembly. This plan would have seen the territory divided almost equally between Jews and Arabs. Once again, the Zionists made public their acceptance of the proposal, and once again, Arab officials announced that any partition would be met with rivers of blood. Shortly after the UN vote, the 20-member Arab League sent their newly organized Arab Liberation Army against the Jews of Palestine. Elements of five regular Arab armies from Egypt, Jordan, Syria, Iraq, and Lebanon invaded Israel on May 15, 1948. Arab League Secretary General Abdul Rahman Azam vowed, "This will be a war of extermination and a momentous massacre, which will be spoken of like the Mongol massacres and the Crusades." But despite their overwhelming numbers and heated rhetoric, after a year of fighting, it was the Jewish state that had won a decisive victory. Based on the 1949 armistice lines, Israel's territory expanded by almost 40%. The Palestinian Arabs were the big losers. For the second time in 10 years, their leaders rejected a partition plan that would have given them independence and more land designated for their state than for the Jewish state. Instead, they ended up with nothing, and 650,000 Palestinians became refugees. Jordan's King Abdullah sent his Arab Legion to occupy the Palestinian West Bank and annex the territory to his kingdom. Egypt took the Gaza Strip and for the next 18 years denied Palestinians any civil rights. It never occurred to the rulers of Jordan or Egypt to create a state for the homeless Palestinians, nor did new Palestinian leaders like Yasser Arafat protest this occupation of their land by foreign rulers. Now, three times in the past decade, Israeli prime ministers have offered Palestinian leaders an independent state far more generous than anything Jordan and Egypt ever allowed when they controlled the West Bank and Gaza. At Camp David in 2000, Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak agreed to the border suggested by President Clinton that would have established a West Bank-Gaza-Palestinian state with some territorial adjustments and with the Palestinians getting East Jerusalem as their capital. For his part, Palestinian Liberation Organization Chairman Yasser Arafat walked out of negotiations, went back home, and launched the Second Intifada. Invoking Islamic Jew hatred as justification, the Palestinians conducted a three-year brutal campaign of suicide bombings against Israeli pizza parlors, wedding halls, and discotheques. In 2005, Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon decided that it was against Israel's security interest to govern the 1.1 million Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Sharon dismantled all of the Jewish settlements and pulled Israeli forces back across the 1967 borders between Israel and Gaza without even any land swaps. As an added bonus, Israel left the Palestinians a thriving flour export industry to help jumpstart the local economy. the Palestinians' response to this generosity? Well, first they destroyed the donated greenhouses, and then they launched a war of missiles and rockets against civilian targets in Israel. In a September 2008 meeting in Jerusalem, then-Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert presented President Abbas with a detailed map of a future Palestinian state that, with land swaps, would constitute close to 100% of the territory of the West Bank and Gaza prior to the June 1967 war. Olmert also offered to divide Jerusalem, enabling the Palestinians to locate their capital in the eastern half of the city. Promising to come back the next day for further discussions, Abbas took Olmert's map to his Ramallah office, just a few miles outside Jerusalem, for his aides to study. But Abbas never returned with the map. This was the last time the Israeli and Palestinian leaders met.
This is what you're seeing. I mean, this is over and over and over and over again. It's important to get context, because you look at all these refugees and you look at the Palestinian, you know, and they have no place.
Right.
But whose fault is that? I mean, it was five times mm-hmm. they were offered land, and they rejected it. Mm-hmm. They rejected a two-state solution. The last time, Yasser Arafat just walked off.
Yeah.
I mean, just walked off. And they just respond back with missiles and fighting. It's like,
craziness.
What in the world is going on here?
All right.
You know? Listen, when you can't make a deal with someone that's always trying to change mm-hmm. the terms of their deal,
yeah,
and they don't want to make a deal with you.
Yeah, it's obvious. It's this all or nothing type thing.
Exactly.
They don't want to split it. They want it all.
And when Egypt and Jordan controlled the West Bank and the Gaza, they weren't giving up any land. They weren't making any concessions, right. The Arabs. But now, no one brings that up. You know, and the big contention is that, you know, they made an agreement just here recently. The Prime Minister of Israel,
Netanyahu,
Benjamin Netanyahu, thank you, to release about 113 prisoners of war. These guys were terrorists who have killed Israelis. They released them as a good faith gesture just to open the talks. Can you imagine people that have been serving prison term for terrorist attacks on your people? You're releasing them. Many of the Israelis were very upset about that, but he felt that's something that he had to do to, again, show good faith, to say, once again, we're coming to the table. This is what we're getting ready to do. But what the Palestinians wanted Israel to do is stop building these settlements on the properties. Like, we're not going to stop building that. This is, you know, we're not going to do that. We're not going to just, you know, they have right to be concerned.
Right.
They have right to be concerned. And we can just hope and pray that the United States is not involved in setting Israel up and causing them more of destruction, more mm-hmm. attacks. Listen, you want to pray. You want to be informed. You want to know the story behind the story when you're hearing news every single day. You want to know God's perspective. Listen, the land is given, you know, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You know, that's the order. And what you're seeing now is Israel continuing mm-hmm. to share and give away. When we come back, we're going to talk about some interesting facts that you may or may not know about Israel to broaden your perspective to understand the apple of God's eye.
You're listening to VFN Radio. Don't forget, you can locate us at VFNTV.com. We'll be right back.
You know, there's nothing like, you know, finding out about, you know, that Jesus wants a personal relationship with you. You know, John, how people say, do you have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what people go, yes. Isn't that a political correct answer? Another religiously correct answer.
I go to church.
Yeah, I go to church. And but the thing is about it is that, you know, it's such a common semantic. It's a common way of vocabulary of religious. It's like the religious jargon of the day. But, you know, there is such a thing as a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. You know, that he's the lover of your soul, and that You know, he compares himself to the bridegroom, and we're the bride, and this intimacy, and he's preparing. I mean, you know, he wants to hang out with us because he loves you. He wants to hang out with you. I mean, and he wants you to want to hang out with him.
Right.
And we call, you know, it's abiding. I mean, think about it. You know, he talks about it in John chapter 15. You know, he just says that, he says, remain or abide in me. I think it's John 15:4. He says, abide in me or remain in me, and I will abide in you or remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must abide in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you abide in me or remain in me. And so, you know, this, sometimes we put the cart before the horse, and we're sitting here trying to do all this stuff for Jesus. And, you know, it's like, dude, it's a byproduct of a personal relationship with him.
That's right.
You know
that's
what I'm right. saying? It's overflow. Go ahead.
A lot of times, too, that you ask, you know, a believer or a Christian these days, you know, why do you read the Bible? And sometimes the pat answer is just, I guess this is what I'm supposed to do. You know, I just right. got to do this chore, all right?
Two chapters a day.
Right.
Come heck or high water, two chapters a day.
And abiding is not something that we have to do. It's something that we get to do. Mm-hmm. And you know, oftentimes people think that, you know, it's only the pastor or the minister that can hear God's voice. But, you know, John 10, you know, it's my sheep know my voice. And that's an right. inheritance for all believers. And so every believer should be encouraged, you know, abiding, spending time and hearing his voice. And
you think about it, I mean, it's just, you know, once you break the mindset and you realize that Jesus wants to talk to you. I mean, you got all these books that have been printed in the world, but the difference in the Bible is the fact that it's a living word, that it comes with the author, and
sure.
that God explains it to you, and he speaks to you from the word, you know. And basically, it's just that, you know, people kind of know that they need to do this, and the enemy's kind of complicated it, you know what I'm saying? And it just, you know, people want to do, they just need a simple plan to do that. And, you know, we put together a simple plan for, you know, that we personally do ourselves. You know, we walk out this plan, and we're seeing children, you know, walk in this plan. And when these children speak about what God is, how they're encountering God and what he's saying, adults lean forward and listen to them on VFN TV. Did you know, remember how that happens? Like, they begin to talk, and everybody like, I want to be the Bible man, you know, out of Texas. And everybody leans forward. Why? Because we know that God speaks to his people. Well, if that's you, if you're tired of religion and you're ready to walk with God, and God's obviously ready to walk with you, you know, he says, you can just put all the stuff aside that you've been trying to do and begin to abide with him. He says, apart from abiding in me, you can do nothing. So, you know, with that, you can actually go to iabide.org. Just go there today, iabide.org. You know, read over a little bit, and if you want to be able to request that plan, you could just request the plan. It'll be sent to you immediately, John. Immediately.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, there's a video there. There's some explanation, a whole, everything you need to be able just to get started. Real simple, simple plan that we're seeing children, 8-year-olds, that are walking with God and hearing from God and just so excited, because when you start listening, I mean, what happens when somebody listens to you? You continue to talk, right?
That's right.
But if people stop listening, you stop talking, right?
Mm-hmm.
And quite often is, if you want to hear God talk to you, you got to start listening to him. And you'll find out he wants to hear what you're saying, but you have to want to hear what he's saying.
That's
and,
right.
And the definition of abide, everything you need is there, iabide.org. Request that simple plan today at iabide.org.
You're listening to VFN Radio, where we're keeping the conversation light. That's LIGHT, light, with your host, Greg Lancaster.
Welcome back. I'm John Ramos, and joining me today is Pat. We're talking about the peace talks that are about to resume again here in the next week or two, with Israel and the Palestinian Authority, and it's over land. But Israel has been down this road before.
Oh, yeah.
Several times, and they've tried to give land, make peace, and yet and still it's always been returned with more rejection, you know, war,
violence, yeah.
violence, attacks, and all at this point we can do is pray. And you talk about patience and being able to endure and suffer much. My goodness, the Israeli people have sure endured a whole lot.
Oh my goodness.
And we need perspective. Did you know that Israel is 1/800 the size of the Arab world. 1/800 wow. the size of the Arab world. And you think, where does all this venom come from? It's like, are you serious? But you're looking nonetheless at a country that has it's 8,000 square miles, pretty much. I mean, the state of New Jersey is 8,729 square miles.
All right.
So it's smaller than the state of New Jersey. I mean, you can probably travel New Jersey from, you know, the top of New Jersey all the way to the bottom, maybe to Cape May, maybe 3 hours, 3.5 hours max, you know, max.
Right.
And that's it. I mean, it's a very, very small state. In fact, Israel can fit in the size of California 19 times.
Wow.
It's just perspective, you know, perspective. Here's this little, tiny, itty-bitty country, and yet they're wanting to take this country out. And it's like, are you serious? You know, is this for real? Winston Churchill was quoted in 1920 as saying, it is manifestly right that the scattered Jews should have a national center and a national home and be reunited, and where else but in Palestine, with which for 3,000 years they have been intimately and profoundly associated. This is Winston Churchill saying this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another person says, who can challenge the rights of the Jews in Palestine? Good Lord, historically, it is really your country. This is the mayor of Jerusalem in 1899. When you think about the number of countries by religious majorities, listen to this. You have 56 countries that have a religious majority that are Islamic, 49 countries that have a religious majority that are Roman Catholic, 20 countries that have a religious majority that are Protestant, 12 Eastern Orthodox, 4 Hindu. There's only one country that has a religious majority that are Jewish. It's Israel.
Right.
I mean, look at the scheme of things. Look at how large, you know, the world is and what's happening in response to Israel. And it's a blessed land. I mean, they're a blessed people. And you can just see over and over the years what, you know, what has happened and what they've contributed to society. And even in the areas of technology, I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. I don't know if you knew this, but Israel, talk about innovations. Israel has the second highest per capita rate of university degrees following Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Israel has the highest ratio of educated scientists and technicians with 135 per 10,000 citizens compared to 81 in the U.S. Listen, this is the highest ratio of educated scientists in the world. Next to Silicon Valley, Israel has the highest concentration of high-tech companies in the world. And Israel has the third largest number of NASDAQ-listed companies in the world behind U.S. and China.
Mm.
Now, this is a country that's smaller than the state of New Jersey.
Right.
And listen to this. It has the third largest number of NASDAQ-listed companies in the world behind U.S. and China. We can fit 19 size, you know, Israel's inside the state of California, square mile wise.
Mm-hmm.
They're a blessed people, and they're the apple of God's eye. And we just want to make sure that we stay informed, that we're not ignorantly, just, you know, uninformed, uneducated, looking at the events that are happening on a television screen or on a computer screen, a laptop, iPad, whatever you have, and just making conclusions and just going along with what a newscaster says. But that we have a godly perspective, and we have history, and we have context to say, listen, these are God's people, and we want to do our very best to support them and support American policy that's only going to bless them and not hurt them, not to mention that they are our number one and only ally in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just reported that the president sent $1 billion to aid in Syria. And it's just like, my goodness, let's stand with Israel.
Well, we're coming to the end of the first hour. We had such a wonderful time. Don't forget to catch us in the extra hour beginning in just a moment. For those that are leaving us, you can catch us at VFNTV.com or catch the second half, the extra hour, on your mobile device, your iPhone, your Android, and all those wonderful places at VFNTV.com. You're listening to VFN Radio. For those that are sticking with us, we'll see you on the other side.
Did you know there's an app that'll make you taller?
Oh, I need that app then. Where is it?
I'm serious. Go on iTunes right now.
Really?
And like on your iPhone. Once you're on it, put your iPhone on the floor and then stand on your iPhone. Check it out. There's an app for that.
Is there an app to make you lose weight? And I need that app too.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. I've seen a few of those.
I need it too, but yeah. I need it. But
well, what there is an app for though. There's an app for the VFN TV daily radio program. You got to check it out. You can go on iTunes, type in VFN TV, and download it on your phone for free. You got all the daily live radio content. You've got all the radio feeds, everything we're talking about. You got it right there with you. So it's like VFN TV on the go. Check it out. VFNTV.com.
Well, you know, I do want to say this morning, to encourage you, that VFN TV 3.0 app has arrived. We have all the new arrangements and conditions, and you already like it. It's got the, when you turn on your or open your VFN TV 3.0 app, you're going to have the recent broadcast will come right up. Anything that's happened on VFN TV, VFN Radio recently, right then. So you don't have to look for anything. I mean, what just happened will be right there in front of you. And then at the top, you have recent in the menu, but you also have series.
Mm-hmm.
And series, you just touch it and it carries you over to the different series, like the highlights, mm-hmm. which also original intent and
right.
Wisdom moments and
prophetic words.
Mm-hmm. And those are series that it has right there. Mm-hmm. And then you have alphabetized next to it, which helps you if you're just looking for something. Hey, I remember that think about the prodigal, and you could just choose alphabetize. But then at the bottom, you can choose live. Like a lot of you listen right now live, and that's available for you. You got to check it out. You know, if you haven't yet downloaded the VFN TV app or seen your upgrade yet, go to your
iTunes Store, go to your Google Play Store and type in VFNTV. It's V Victor FNTV, and it, you download the VFNTV and the Daily Radio Program app, and it's free. It's there for you to be able to encourage you. You're going to need an encouraging voice. You're going to need words of wisdom, and we need to build our relationship now so we're understanding each other, and we can trust each other and realize that we're in this for the right reason, capital R, Jesus Christ, and for the advancement of the king, as his kingdom, and the safety of his people.